This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Nestled in the valley between the Titiwangsa Range and the Sittal Hills lies the old wooden tin mining village of Kampung Haka, Mantin. The Sittal River, which once brought down the rich tin ore from the hill slopes, is now a pale shadow of its former glory. The village has a rich history dating back to the late 19th century, which saw a great influx of Chinese workers brought in as indentured labour by the colonial government to work in the tin industry. They were mainly poor and desperate people facing adverse conditions for their survival. Life was neither safe nor was it much respected. These early pioneers with limited resources, working with simple implements, facing hardship and hostile terrain, built their homes, temple and school, which formed the early settlement of Kampung Haka. But this village is now under threat of demolition. Grandma Kong's family is one of the last few families still living here, safeguarding the history, culture, and tradition which their ancestors fought hard to build.
Good afternoon, this is Liv and Len on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. We are continuing our coverage of past films that were released under the Freedom Film Fest, which has been bringing socially relevant human rights films to Malaysians from all the way back in 2003. So as we stay home to stay safe, the folks behind the Freedom Film Network are releasing specially curated Freedom Film playlists, which they've dubbed Weekend Watch with Freedom Film Fest. And this is happening on their YouTube channel. And basically, it's just a look back at the many thought-provoking issues that have been highlighted throughout the years through film. And this week, the focus is on films with strong female community leaders. And right now, we're going to look back at the 2015 film titled Memory as Resistance, Grandma Kong Defending Her Village, where protagonist Kong Suk Kun, a resident of Kampung Haka over in Mantin, shares her experiences of living there all her life and how her village and the only way of life that she's ever known was being threatened by commercial development. And I'm going to find out more about this film from one of the co-directors, Chan Siong Fung, who joins me today. Welcome, Siong Fung. How are you today?
Thank you. As well as can be, given the circumstances, Juliet.
What crazy times we live in, Siong Fung. I don't know what to say.
Yes. And living dangerously.
I know, ragged edge of disaster. And who could have thought about it, you know, when we met up back in 2018? And that was, you know, when we were discussing also a film that you produced, which was called Five Tigers, right? And I remember you telling me at the time you were an accidental filmmaker. Am I correct? Remind us why you said that.
Yes, I mean, I said I was an activist working in a threatened community, but an accidental filmmaker. That's how this film actually came about.
And for those of us who haven't had the chance to watch it, can you remind us what the story Memory as Resistance is all about? You know, what issues was it tackling?
Well, it is, we featured this strong old lady. She's now 93 and still living in the village. And her memories of how her life has been from the day she was born and even before, you know, her grandparents. So, you know, going back to 100 years of history and people living and struggling in this village. And currently, in the last 7 years or so, facing this threat of demolition.
And as you said, you know, she was born, I remember, I've watched the film, it's wonderful. You know, she was born in 1927. Basically, they're descendants from workers from China who came, right, seeking out a living here in Malaya at the time, right? I mean, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, correct. I mean, her main thing is, you know, she's lived here, her family And even her forebears have been involved in all the industry from tin mining. And that's where this little community started as a tin mining community. And they were allowed by then the British colonials to live around the area to, you know, because they were the workers and the people who serviced the workers. So the village was born out of these circumstances. You know, their forebears coming with nothing and in desperate times making their homes. Mm. And from tin mining and then eventually in the 70s to rubber tapping and also making roads, you know, where the village is. I don't know if you know anything about Mantin. That was the old trunk road going south. And the people were involved in all that. And, you know, and they've been living there and growing their families and all these years. And suddenly one day, that was what it happens. The demolition, you know, happened in very quick, and almost half of the village was gone in a day or two.
Oh my goodness. And how did the, because I think, you know, if I've got it correct, you know, they didn't have proper warning about this happening, or, you know, maybe didn't understand the full impact of, you know, the development that was coming their way. And even when they tried to protest it, if I'm correct, you know, they, you know, faced a lot of like resistance from the authorities, brutality even, you know, were treated very badly.
Yeah, I mean, they... You know, these, a lot of them are illiterate, or, you know, or they are day wage workers, and they didn't get any proper, you know, they didn't, the developers didn't come to meet them or discuss, you know, what conference. It's all by hearsay and by a flyer sent, and that said, oh, by this and this date, we are coming and you have to move. I mean, you know, people have been living there for five generations. Can you imagine? And on the day of the on the demolition, it was quite brutal because obviously these villagers trying to defend their themselves and defend their homes, and they were, you know, treated badly,
yeah,
and unfairly. So it's just amazing that it's happening in this day and age in our country.
Yeah, really shocking. Like, and if I'm correct, again, it's like six generations of families living there still, right?
Yeah, correct. And we've seen scenes that people rushing home because there was a couple that have been, they were in the clinic getting their medication, and, you know, there were people who were disabled at home, and she had to rush home to get, you know, make sure she got all the medication and all their things. I mean, it was a horror. I mean, it's a terrible scene when it happened.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, gosh, when you see it, it's really so shocking that, like you said, it's so shocking that that's happening in this day and age, that, you know, Malaysians are being treated like that, you know, by the authorities, you know, really horrible things. But just, you know, the start of the film starts off very gently, you know, with you know, taken into Grandma Kong's story. And she's such a fascinating woman, right? How were you actually introduced to her in the first place?
Well, of course, like I said, we were alerted of this happening online, actually, by some friends, and we rushed to the scene to see what we can do. And of course, there's, you know, it was helter-skelter. Everybody, you know, those who were involved were arrested or whatever. But eventually what we did, and that's how we started the Rakan Mantin, mm-hmm, was we got to know the village better and the villagers better, and you know, really understand, try to understand what is actually the situation there. Mm-hmm. And we saw this wonderful opportunity, and in terms of the story of, you know, what a unique historical and cultural landscape of this early settlement, and the tenacity and the challenges that these people face, and, you know, how they have. Actually, historically, this was a very self-contained village, you know, an early settlement. They had schools, they built temples, they built, you know, all the essential services that they needed. And, you know, they have thrived. And just because of, you know, some administrative oversight or whatever, that they don't have a paper to say that they, you know, own the land, or, yeah, or who owns the land, nobody knows.
Mm.
Because that's the ongoing challenge that we are trying to find, you know. And that's how the story, and Grandma was, you know, saying that's how we lived. And that's where we saw how the her memory, and she will always say, oh, I'm old, I can't do, she's old. She said, I can't go out and stand and fight with you, but I can tell you stories of how we have lived and how we, you know, want to continue to live. And that was the inspiration on how we, you know, made this film, basically.
Yeah, I mean, just following her life, you know, she was there from, I think she was born there, isn't it?
And yes, all right. She was born there. Her grandparents came from China as whatever. So she grew up as a child, you know.
Yeah.
And she grew her family of 9 children or 10 children.
Yeah, I think she said she gave birth to all her 10 children. Sadly, one passed away, but she raised 9 of them in that very same house, you know.
Yes. All right.
Amazing. And
it's a house full of history. I mean, even the, you know, how people have, you know, eat the living and, you know, made something for themselves. And I don't know, this abuse of power and careless disregard of this unique and vulnerable historical and cultural landscape, for me, is the big injustice and the big story that I want to talk about.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing also what you said, you know, they eked out a living. They were very self-sustainable. It was not like they were looking for handouts. They were not looking for anything other than to be left alone to continue a life that they had been living all these years in, you know, quiet seclusion as it is, right?
Yes.
But yet this is a story we are hearing even today, you know, people just minding their own business, but big developers coming in, all sorts of, unscrupulous things happening.
Well, yeah. I mean, if the villagers have said if they the government want the land for a road or for a school or for whatever, you know, they are happy to move with compensation. But this is just, you know, to some commercial guy who's making money out of, you know, building more shop houses or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just senseless. It's greed.
You know, when you made the film, right, and you wanted to tell these stories as well, I as you mentioned, you started something also called Rakan Mantin with the co-director of this film, Victor Chin, right? And I know you wanted to raise awareness on the issues, but you also used, you wanted to use cultural programming, visual communication and storytelling, right, to express your disagreement towards the authority. Am I right?
Correct. So we have organized through a Facebook group called Rakan Mantin, which basically bring friends from around, you know, to come and visit and see for themselves. And a lot of these people, actually, when they come, they connect also with this, you know, their own sense of history. You know, all of us, our parents came from somewhere with not, you know, big money, but, you know, have made a living and we are part of this community, part of this country. And, you know, being treated like this is, you know, really, there's a sense of indignation and you know, the injustice of it all. So we've been bringing friends to see the village. So through programs, through the celebration of the village, you know, Chinese New Year or Lantern Festival, or even, you know, making dumplings, so that people are exposed or they are become aware or make friends with the villagers. And for the villagers, it is good because they never expected people, you know, they have been so, vulnerable or poor. People don't really care to go in to visit such a village. But now people come and see. So it really gave them a sense of pride, a sense of identity, and really recover their sense of, you know, history, which I think it's very important for them that, you know, for them now to carry on, to fight for themselves, the, you know, this sense of, you know, the village coming together and their sense of pride and identity is very important. So we did that slowly over the years, you know, bringing not just local people, friends around, mm-hmm. but also international friends and everybody. And basically, we also had a good time because it is a very a nice area. you know, with the hills, with the river, with the fruit trees, with the, you know, durians. Mantin is quite famous for their durians and nangkas.
I know, I've been watching that film. I was like, gosh, how have I never been here? I desperately need to go and visit this place once
yes,
it's safe
yeah,
again.
You're most welcome when times are better. We have also not been able to visit because of the restrictions. But
of course. But, you know, when the documentary was released, right, and this was back in 2015, what sort of responses did it garner at the time? You know, anything that, you know, stood out in particular for you?
Well, I think people were, like you, quite impressed or blown away by this old lady, Madame Kong.
She's amazing.
And, her strength and her clarity. I mean, she's not an actress and she was very natural, you know, which made our job filming her, you know, very easy because, you know, she speaks from the bottom of her heart, you know, and with all these years of local wisdom and whatever. And that, I think, impressed a lot of people. And I remember showing this film to one community facing same demolition, a Malay kampong in Penang somewhere. Mm-hmm. And the old members of that village, you know, the man stood up and said, look, an old lady, 90 years old, can fight for her village. You know, what are we doing sitting around? We can do it for ourselves too. And they were, you know, quite motivated.
Grandma Kong, the rebel rouser.
Yes. And I mean, that's the thing. I mean, people always think, you know, when you're old or when you're, you know, you don't know anything or you can't do anything. And that's why, you know, we want to use this concept of, you know, her memory and her, you know, is a form of resistance.
Yeah. And as you said, you know, and as she tells in the story as well, you know, she wasn't allowed to go to school because she had to help her mom look after her siblings. She didn't actually have any formal education. But wow, you know, the amazing things that she did despite, you know, all of that, right?
Yeah. She taught herself to read and she still reads the newspaper. This is her pastime, you know. And she's not very mobile. And now, especially, she's been immobile for the last 3 years, quite sad. But, you know, her mind is still there and slowly going, but it's there. And she's very clear that she wants to live out her days, you know, there.
Yes, even then she said that, right? Back in 2015 when you filmed it, she said, right, like, I'm not going to do well in my kids' houses. You know, I've only known this place and this is where I want to be, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do we know where the case stands at the moment? Like, what is the current situation regarding the development?
Well, in the last 2-3 years, we've been trying to bring this to the so-called, well, then new government, state government. I mean, in the local government and it's been a bit disappointing, I must say. We gathered information, we gathered as much, you know, and the film was part of the information about the you know, we have some solid history and whatever, but it's, you know, just been very slow going. I mean, we've been, you know, doing our best to document as much as we can about the village and you know, what's its aspirations. People have come to, the villagers have, you know, signed that they will want to live on there and all that. And that's all handed to the local state government and it's in their hands. Well, we haven't heard anything since.
Okay. All right. That's really disappointing to hear.
Yeah, because, I mean, for them, and especially now in this time of uncertainty, this uncertain tenure of their land on which their homes and their little garden patches is you know, out their backyard, it's very important for their livelihood, you know.
Yeah, of course. Especially now, right?
Yes, exactly. I mean, most of them, I mean, they don't have, you know, riches or assets to fall back on. Their day job earners, and this is very, they are very vulnerable, you know, and now they've been telling me, oh, we haven't have been able to work now for months. And so how shall they live? I mean, also in terms of local government planning, I mean, are we going to create more urban poor? And it's just so unnecessary, you know, of evicting these people out of this piece of land.
Yeah, and again, not for any sort of essential service as such, right? It's just more property development as such.
Yes.
All right. But, you know, for those who maybe come to watch it now only, right, you know, with the today's, I guess, context, you know, what do you hope that they will observe or take away from the film?
Well, I guess they should see the injustice of it all. First, I hope that they see the beauty and the history and the culture that's there of that village. Mm-hmm. And of course, the abuse of power and the injustice that these people are facing and how vulnerable they are as a community at this present moment, that, you know, what can we do, really? And what we should do?
Yeah, and, you know, as you said, you showed the film to a community in Penang facing a similar situation, and we see it all over the world, all over the country, sorry, right? These small villages, yeah. You know, where supposedly illiterate people don't know what, you know, people who are poorer maybe or not really aware of their rights, you know, having their land taken away in, you know, not a very open way, shall we put it that way? And I guess, you know, watching this film is also a way to get people, you know, invested in what's happening around us, you know, to see the injustice of what's happening.
Yeah, of course. I mean, the most obvious, of course, is the Orang Asal, you know, issue of where they live and how their land also taken away for money, for whatever. But this is the same, and it's just crazy. I mean, is that our way forward? Is that development for our country?
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So definitely watch the film, you know, if nothing else, just to see Madam Kong, you know, sharing her story. She's amazing. Any last message that you'd like to leave us with?
Well, I hope that, you know, we are just the medium or the messenger to use this craft. And like I said, we are accidental filmmaker and that, you know, we, with the support of the Freedom Film Network, we managed to, you know, try our hands. This is our first time, both Victor and I, in our twilight years, I must say, to, you know, to make a social documentary, and hopefully it has a, you know, impact, or it has some use, and it's a way to tell these stories that are often, you know, not so easy or so-called always sensitive to tell. And, you know, and with currently the persecution and going on by the authorities to, you know, even take that little creative space that we have to tell the stories. And I think many people have these stories, and I think of their own injustices or that they have experienced, and you know, finding a creative way to tell them. And I would encourage, you know, people to come up and tell this story. So like you see, even Madam Kong in her 90s, you know, didn't stop her. And us making films in our, I'm 60, Victor is 70 over years old.
Hats off to you guys.
We try, but it needs to be told. The story needs to be told.
Yeah, and it needs to be told in different ways, right? Yes, you read it in the newspapers. Okay, so you you get the facts of it, but, you know, hearing the stories as, you know, as you guys did through this film, you know, that just brings a whole different dimension to the issue. You see it for yourself, you know, it's really quite amazing what you guys did. So congratulations on that film again.
Thank you. It is our hope, but you will see.
Yeah. Well, the film has been re-released on the Freedom Film Fest YouTube channel. So just head to youtube.com and search for Freedom Film Fest and just search for Memory as Resistance, Grandma Kong Defending Her Village. And the other film that's been released this week is called Alice Lives Here, and that's by director Jules Raman Ong. So catch both those films, both, you know, featuring very strong female characters, you know, fighting for their rights, defending their villages, defending their homes. So that's happening over on YouTube. And, you know, if anyone wants to get in touch to find out more about Rakan Mantin and, you know, the works that you're doing, how can they best do that?
Well, Rakan Mantin has a Facebook page.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So just join as a friend, and then you can, you know, see the activities or information that's released there.
Okay. All right. So just head just search for Rakan Mantin over on Facebook, join the group and find out how you can get involved. Thank you so much for joining me today. I've been speaking to Chan Seong Fung. She's a film director. She co-directed the film Memory as Resistance, Grandma Kong Defending Her Village. Her co-director was, of course, Victor Chin. Again, head to Freedom Film Network's YouTube channel to watch that film this week. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
These buildings and settlements in which our ancestors lived, thought, worked and prayed are history with many dimensions, powerful in our imagination to remind people who they are and to resist authorities' power to define them as something else. Squatters, pendatang.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.